And welcome into the Monday edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. Glad to have you alongside. I suspect if you listen to my podcast on a regular basis, you're probably a Packers fan. And today we've got a lot to get to because for the second straight season, the Packers are headed to the NFC Championship game.
Third down and goal for Green Bay. Rodgers going to throw it. Fire, and it's caught. Touchdown, Adams. Rodgers on the fake, looking, pumping. Rodgers running, and he's in. Second and goal. Jones backing his way in. Touchdown. Jones has 98 of them. Play fake here, though. Rodgers going for it all, looking to break it open. He's got it. Lazard going to go. Touchdown. And so the last Green 19 from Aaron Rodgers today is victory formation.
Play-by-play courtesy of Fox. We will have a lot of post-game reaction coming up in just a couple of minutes. We'll hear from the quarterback, Aaron Rodgers. We'll hear from Matt LaFleur. Hell, we'll even hear from Tom Brady coming up in just a few minutes as well. My analysis of the game is this. I still stand by my assertion that defense wins championships. And the fact of the matter is, on Saturday, the Rams' defense wasn't very good. Now, do the Packers get credit for that? Yeah, sure. Of course they do. They get some credit for it. I don't know that they get credit for Aaron Donald's ribs being bad, but they contained him. More on that in a moment. They contained Jalen Ramsey. More on that in a minute. But here's where some of the real credit goes to, and I'm going to spread it around a little bit. Some of it goes to Brian Gutekunst. A lot of it goes to Matt LaFleur. A couple of position coaches as well, which we'll get to momentarily. But I want to start with the depth on the offensive line, because it has been tested this year. And whereas once this was a team plugging in the likes of Derek Sherrod and Jason Spitz, who I call the Turnstile Twins, they've got guys like Rick Wagner, who has a couple of bulky knees, but still manned up and was really good against a very good defense on Saturday. They've got Billy Turner, who's moved around the line. They've got the real Swiss Army knife of Elton Jenkins, who could be a Pro Bowler at a couple of different positions on the line, which is unheard of in the National Football League. I mean, you can ask the question, how good could the Packers be if David Bakhtiari, Lane Taylor, and even Jared Veld here were healthy? Bakhtiari played most of the season before blowing out his knee in a freak accident in practice. Lane Taylor is the guy that we haven't even been talking about at all this season because he was lost so early, but it allowed other guys, whether it was a Rick Turner, or a Rick Wagner, or a Billy Turner, or an Elton Jenkins, to step up and really become the players that they became this year. The offensive line on this Packers team, they have been the anchors on a club that is one home win away from going to their first Super Bowl in a decade. This is a team that has never had this kind of depth before. If it were Brian Bulaga in years past that went out, well, what are they going to do over at right tackle? And Brian Bulaga missed a lot of time in the last 5 years that he spent with the Packers. And he's not the only one. There have been guys that have missed time on the offensive line, and the Packers haven't had a solution because, again, they'd plug in a guy like a Derek Sherrod or a Jason Spitz, and they would fail. Aaron Donald was completely neutered, and part of that certainly was his rib injury, but so was Leonard Floyd, who had 10.5 sacks in the regular season and then two more last week against the Seahawks in the wild card round. Donald and Floyd combined for four tackles. Two of them were combined tackles. They were completely taken out of this game. You look at that trio of Elton Jenkins, Corey Linsley, and Lucas Patrick. They were opening up all of the holes in the run game, but without Billy Turner at left tackle protecting Aaron Rodgers' blind side, the Packers might have had a very long afternoon. Instead, Rodgers wasn't sacked. He was knocked to the ground just once. He was clean the entire game. And leading up to Saturday's game against the Rams, we were all talking about the matchup between Jalen Ramsey and Devontae Adams, right? Well, Devontae got his because he needed to get his. Now, he didn't have a spectacular game. He had a very good game, 9 receptions. Never want to sneeze at 9 receptions, but it was only for 66 yards. Averaged only 7.3 yards per reception, only got 1 touchdown. I mean, these are mortal numbers. Alan Lazard caught the 58-yard bomb after dropping one earlier. But 4 receptions for him, 4 receptions for Robert Tonyan, 4 receptions for Marquez Valdez-Scantling. I mean, Aaron Rodgers had a good game. Didn't have a great game by his standards, but he had a good game. 23 of 36. There were a couple of drops in there. 296 yards, 2 touchdowns. No interceptions, of course, because he doesn't throw interceptions. A quarterback rating of 108.1. This game was won on the ground, though. Between Aaron Jones, Jamal Williams, and A.J. Dillon, this was a team that racked up 191 yards rushing. Aaron Jones, 14 carries for 99 yards, including that 60-yarder that began the second half. That set the tone for the way the second half was going to go. A.J. Dillon, only 6 attempts for 27 yards. They were a hard-fought 4.5 yards per carry. Also got a little bit banged up. There was no reason to bring him in or back into the game when Jamal Williams was doing what he was doing, just his hard-fought 65 yards on 12 carries. But that's what December and January football at Lambeau Field is all about. It's all about controlling the clock. And that's what they did. They controlled the clock. There's one name that we haven't talked about on this podcast yet that we need to talk about. And that name isn't a player. He's the offensive line coach, Adam Stenovich. In 2 years, Adam Stenovich has coached up this offensive line to the point where they may be the ones that have allowed Aaron Rodgers to have an MVP season despite all of their injuries. On the ground, they've opened up the holes. They rarely get flagged for penalties. They are so sound fundamentally. Adam Stenovich, Marshfield native, by the way. I guess the only knock on Adam Stenovich is instead of going to Wisconsin, he went to Michigan in the mid-2000s. But he's maybe your unsung hero because we've talked about Elgton Jenkins this year. We've talked about Rick Wagner this year. We've talked about Billy Turner this year. The offensive line, the big hog mollies up front, I wouldn't say that they've been getting the lion's share of the glory because they haven't. Most people who don't know anything about the Packers, it starts and ends with Aaron Rodgers, and sometimes they'll sprinkle in some Devontae Adams. And then sometimes they'll get Robert Tonyan and they'll still mispronounce his name, even though we've been pronouncing it Tonyan and not Tonyan for a couple of months now. But what that offensive line has done as a unit, I don't know that I've ever seen this in my lifetime of watching Packers football. I mean, I wasn't alive in the 60s, but they've got excellence and they've got depth. And Adam Stenovich and Nathaniel Hackett, the offensive coordinator, they deserve the lion's share of the credit for that. And Brian Gutekunst for assembling this line. I feel better. Now, I'm not going to make any guarantees. I made the assertion about when the Packers were playing the Giants in the NFC Championship game back at the end of the 2007 season, that I guaranteed that the Packers were going to just roll out the helmets and they were on their way to the Super Bowl. Well, obviously the Packers lost that game, and I have never made a guarantee since. I have been barred by the listeners on my old WSSP radio show, as well as my own self-preservation interests, to never make guarantees. So I do not make a guarantee. I don't like making predictions, but I will say this about the Packers of 2020. I feel better about this Packers team as a whole than I have about any Packers team since the ones that went to the Super Bowl in back-to-back years in 1996 and 1997. I felt good about a couple of other teams. I felt good about the Run the Table team of 2016. I thought that they just got hot at the right time of the year. Unfortunately, they ran out of gas in the NFC Championship game against Atlanta. I didn't feel good at all about the team that won the Super Bowl 10 years ago, because why would you? At one point, they were 8-6 on the season. They had to win their last two regular season games and then go on the road in successive weeks and in non-successive weeks beat the 1, 2, and 3 seed just to get to the Super Bowl. They were the underdogs the entire time. They got hot at the right time of the year. Give them credit. That's why they play the games. I didn't feel great about those teams, and they were so banged up as well. This is a team that has a couple of injuries, most notably David Bakhtiari. But again, it's the depth on this team that has picked up the slack for that. Aaron Rodgers is playing at the best clip of his career since a couple of those teams that I mentioned. He was playing at the best clip of his career at the end of the 2016 season after he made the run the table. It wasn't even a proclamation. It was just an aside. I was standing a foot from him when he said it, and it was like, oh, that's a neat soundbite, and then it just caught fire, and it was everywhere. Oh, we're going to run the table. We're going to run the table. Aaron Rodgers says the Packers are going to run the table. It was an aside. I'm going to find the soundbite. I think I have it somewhere. Maybe I'll play it on Wednesday's or Friday's show. But it was just an aside. It was just like, oh, yeah, man, maybe we can get hot and run the table. That's all it was. But then they did, almost, at least to the NFC Championship game. But Aaron was playing at an incredible clip then. He was also playing at the best, 16-game clip of his career in 2011. And that was the season the Packers went 15-1. That was also the last time that they were the number one seed in the NFC playoffs. And we thought that, the playoffs were going to run through Lambeau Field. That was the narrative. Oh, the Packers coming off a Super Bowl championship year. They got better, which they didn't, but they got better. They're 15-1, but their defense was atrocious. And in 2011, the difference between that season 9 years ago and this season now is that there's so much better depth on defense. That's why I always go back to defense wins championships. The last time the Packers won the Super Bowl, the one thing that they did have was a top 10 defense. And they haven't had a top 10 defense in the 10 years since. And they were one of the worst teams defensively in 2011. It was just Aaron Rodgers throwing touchdown after touchdown after touchdown after touchdown, having the best 16-game stretch of his career that allowed the Packers to go 15-1, but they were exposed against the Giants in the divisional round of the playoffs at Lambeau Field for a number of different reasons. Most notably, to me, there are a couple of things. Number one, that was the week that then-offensive coordinator Joe Philbin's son tragically drowned on the Fox River just off the UW-Oshkosh campus, right behind the College Sports Center, if you're familiar with the Oshkosh campus, which is a horrible tragedy that no parent should have to live through. And it rattled as it would any human being. But it rattled Joe Philbin, and he wasn't as involved with the team that week as he normally would have been. That was one part of it. The other part of it was that Aaron Rodgers played like a human being after playing the previous 16 games like nothing we've ever seen before. Superhuman. On a different level, on a different planet. That was 2011 Aaron Rodgers. 2020 Aaron Rodgers. The game is so slow in front of him that it just seems like he's in such a good space right now. He believes in his play caller, who's also his head coach, in Matt LaFleur. They're on the same wavelength, and he's got just better guys around him on both sides of the ball. He's got a better offensive line this year than he had back in 2011. He's got an infinitely better defense in 2020. Than he had in 2011. And some of these guys have developed. Some of them have been guys that have come in via free agency. You look at the Smith brothers, Adrian Amos. Where would the Packers be without those guys? And then the guys that they did draft and develop, Jair Alexander, Kevin King, Darnell Savage, Kenny Clark. That's why I feel as good about this Packers team as I have since those teams of the late 1990s. It's not because of one or two guys that have amazing individual talents, and certainly the Packers do have that, whether you're talking about Aaron Rodgers, Devontae Adams, we were talking about Jair Alexander a minute ago, Kenny Clark, who, he's started off a little bit slow this year, but he certainly picked it up. It's the depth on both sides of the field. That's how you win a championship in the NFL, generally. Sometimes you can get hot like they did 10 years ago. But generally, if you're looked at as, yeah, that should be a team that is favored to go to the Super Bowl, it's because it's a team that has depth. It's a team that can beat you in a number of different ways. The Packers' offense on Saturday, it was good. It wasn't great, but it was good. It was good enough to beat a really good Los Angeles Rams team that had just beaten Seattle the week prior to that. A Los Angeles Rams team that was coming out of the NFC West, which by far was the strongest division in football this year. So am I going to sit here and tell you that I know what's going to happen against the Buccaneers coming up on Sunday? No, I can't do that. These games are still played by human beings. I will say that I feel really good about the Packers, and they feel really good about it as well. We're going to start our post-game coverage first with the quarterback, Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron, one of my favorite stories you've ever told is about getting the standing ovation coming off the field in 08 after you beat a winless team. Can you compare that feeling to what you were feeling during the two-minute warning when everyone's chanting MVP, MVP? And related to that, what did it mean to have those fans here, and what's it going to mean to have them here next week?
Oh, man. Talk about just pure joy running out of that tunnel. You know, we've had a few hundred for a couple games, but it felt like 50,000 when we ran out of the tunnel. It really did. It was such a special moment. Forgot how much you truly, truly miss having a crowd there. And obviously that wasn't, you know, a normal, like last year against Seattle type of crowd, but it felt like 50, 60,000. It really did. It's hard to really put into words how special that feeling is, but you can feel it. It's so palpable. You can feel the energy of the stadium, and it's just different. It's different playing in front of a crowd. It really is. It's just a little more special and obviously more sweet. I was joking with the guys in the huddle. There was a time I played the NBA 2K, like in the offseason, the video game, and there's – what happens a lot of times is late in games, if like your stud player for the game is kind of had a good game and gets to the free throw line, they'll chant MVP. So I used to tease, you know, my buddy Papa, I'd, you know, be feeding like Drew Gooden or Mark Eaton or, you know, some random obscure 80s or 90s or even 70s basketball player and try to get him, you know, score 40 or 50 in the game. And then always just kind of, late in the fourth, they get a foul. You just kind of hear that MVP chant. It's just something. It was just something special in those moments. And tonight, I was just feeling what that felt like. Just how sweet and special that chant is. I've heard it, you know, a few times over the years, but every time it kind of gets you. It's really, really special.
Mike Spofford.
Yeah, Aaron, just to follow up on the touchdown to Allen, what were your thoughts when you called that play in the huddle, and what were the keys to executing it as well as you guys did?
Yeah, I mean, I thought the communication all night was great, especially between Maddie and I. And we talked about repeating that call because it really didn't look like what we were trying to run because Allen, the guy jumped so hard and Allen kind of went around him. So we talked about coming back to it. We've been running, duo or inside the inside zone there effectively most of the night. And it's just hard action off of that. So when the play was called, I was seeing a touchdown for sure. Came up off the fake, really tried to sell the fake, came off the fake and saw Allen digging. So I knew that they're, you know, kind of both guys had jumped it. Like I said, I did throw it a little more inside than I wanted to. And he made a really nice catch, kept his feet, and put that thing away. That was pretty special.
Bill Huber.
Hey, Aaron. Speaking of that play, can you contrast the feeling heading into that drive where you're kind of sputtering, the Rams are in the game, and then you get the touchdown and, you know, the crowd's going bananas and you got the game pretty well wrapped up?
Yeah, that's the beauty in momentum. I don't feel like we were really sputtering, Bill, per se. You know, the previous drive, we had a few opportunities to score. Sure. You know, I missed Quez wide open. Allen, you know, couldn't come down with that one ball. I feel like we had some chances there. And then the next drive, we just didn't execute that third down. So I didn't feel like we were necessarily sputtering, but we needed a couple plays. And it was, like I said, it was a crazy kind of sequence leading up to that with, you know, a great run by Jonesy, a fumble, and then, you know, we'll swing out to Quez and he makes, you know, we held on to blocking. He kind of breaks the tackle and gets the first down. And that was a really important play when it comes down to it. That's what we always talk about. You never know what the play is going to be that's going to, you know, be the most important play of the game. Sometimes it can be a 4-yard play that gets us another first down, a set of downs, and then we can come back and hit Allen and put us up 2 scores. But there were a lot of those little plays that made a big difference in the game today.
Congratulations. I know there might be some thought among some people that with the crowds so far less than capacity, maybe the home field advantage doesn't mean as much for a conference championship game as it would otherwise. Obviously, you've been waiting for this for a while with all the conference championship games you played on the road. Just what does it mean to you to get to play at Lambeau next week?
Thanks for asking that, Steve. It means a lot. And Jordy and I talked about it years ago. Been a lot of starts in this league without being able to be a part of hosting an NFC championship. Now, I remember what it felt like in 2007. Especially after we watched the Giants beat Dallas, you know, and us and Dallas, it kind of, we thought were the two best teams in the NFC that year. Giants beat them. We felt really good about hosting and our chances. That was a really, really cold game for sure. Hopefully it's a little colder than it was tonight, but the fans were special. The energy was special tonight, and there is a home field advantage. And just the fact that we get to host, can't say sleep in our own bed because there's still this antiquated idea of staying at a, you know, hotel a night before the game instead of your, you know, warm, cozy 6-night-a-week bed. But I know there's COVID involved in that, so I understand. I'm not trying to, you know, I am still salty about that antiquated idea. But it is meaningful to have fans at the game. Hopefully we can get even more if this worked out. I'm sure Mark will have some sort of announcement and team at some point in the next few days. But it'll be exciting to enjoy this tonight, to celebrate, and then to watch the game tomorrow and to know that whoever wins is coming our place.
Mark Daniels.
Very congrats. Kind of along those lines, you spent so much putting the plan together. Do you catch yourself at any point tonight just going, geez, this plan was really good?
You know, that's a good question, Mark. There are times in every season where there's some weeks where you're going through the process and Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and you're like, man, I don't know. Like, I don't know about this plan. And you go out and you just dominate, you know, and there's sometimes you come in, you feel amazing about the plan, you get in the game and it doesn't maybe work out as well as you think. This was one of those weeks where we were working through it Wednesday and Thursday and Friday, and I feel like it just got fine-tuned and fine-tuned even more each day. And Matt's such a grinder. I mean, he was like telling me before the 2-minute drive, yeah, I was just watching 2 minutes before the game, and I was like, what? Like, that's what you're doing for the game? But I think that's the beauty in him and his style and the staff that we have is there's no stone left unturned. And sometimes, you know, there's, like the kids say, TMI. But most of the time, the information really helps. And I feel like we were really ready to play. And Matty just had a really good sequence that he went with. And we had some really good runs. Steno did a great job with the run plan. We had some really good stuff in the red zone. And then when it came down to it, we had to execute at times when things didn't maybe look perfect, and we made some plays.
The drive at your first touchdown, you guys were really grinding it out. And then you get that penalty on Aaron Donald, the unsportsmanlike, where he yanks Elgton Jenkins' helmet. Did you see that? And, you know, just from your ability to witness things like that, and did you see that frustration might have been building in there with them, with the way you guys were playing up front?
I mean, maybe not in the first quarter, Tom. I feel like there was frustration building for sure, because our plan was pretty simple. We repeated so many calls tonight, ran kind of right at them on a lot of plays. It was mostly inside zone stuff the entire game. Credit to Matt and Steno especially, with the runs that they were dialing up. But there was some frustration for sure. They didn't pressure maybe as much as I thought they would. Now, the pressure stats will include a five-man rush, but most of their fronts for a time was that five kind of bigs look. There wasn't a lot of second-level pressure most of the game. I'm not sure if that was the plan coming in, but we did do a good job of handling the line of scrimmage, and there was some frustration for sure, but maybe not that. I don't know what was going on. I kind of turned and saw it late and saw Donald grab his face mask, and when I saw the flag come out, I was just trying to get our guys not to retaliate because it looked like we were probably going to get that one.
We'll do one more. Nancy Armour.
Hey, Aaron. Congratulations. You've talked a lot about how special this season has been, and I'm wondering if there comes a point that it kind of goes beyond being a special season and almost feels like a season of destiny, and if you're reaching that point, and if not, how close you kind of feel like you guys might be.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting question. I really feel like that we have the ability to manifest things that we desire in our own lives through our spoken word and our intentions, and that's kind of the direction that I've really tried to stay on this year, of really being wary about my moods, what I was thinking about, my perspective, trying to be as positive as possible and to continue to try and live with an attitude of gratitude. And that's what I talk about a lot on these Zooms, is just how thankful I am to be in this opportunity. To be the starting quarterback here, to be relied upon for my play, my leadership, my presence, my daily preparation. There's no greater feeling. I mean, this is such a special honor. You know, I think it's one of the greatest honors of my life, definitely up until this point, to be able to lead this team and to be counted on by my teammates to bring not just my physical play, but my presence, my emotions, my words. And I really strongly believe in speaking things to life. And we've been talking a lot about how a positive wave can be so powerful. And I feel like we have that wave building, and it's been building and building and building. And it's kind of been backboned by so many great people, like Big Dog, who won't show up in the stat sheet a whole lot, but he is such a special human and greatest, in my opinion, blocking tight end, definitely of his generation. But what he brings from a personal standpoint, you can't quantify that. You really can't. You can't put a stat on that, but you can feel it. It's palpable. It's tangible. You can really reach out and touch that energy and that positivity and that love that he has for the guys, for myself. I mean, he's such a support beam for me. I can lean on him. He's like a big oak tree. You know, he's taking care of all of us. And there's a lot of guys who have brought special energy to the team. I think about Ja, the kind of person that he is, the Aquarius. You know, there's a beauty in the diversity in the team that we have in personality. And I'm thankful for the guys. I'm thankful for this this opportunity to still be here and still be the guy, and excited about what we can accomplish together.
He is going to be a three-time MVP in just a couple of weeks, Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers. I want to continue on with someone who's not going to be the coach of the year this season. I still think it's going to be Kevin Stefanski over with the Cleveland Browns. But Matt LaFleur should get some consideration. This is a guy who in back-to-back seasons has gone 13-3 and gone to the NFC Championship game. Again, in his first two seasons as Packers head coach. Here he is, Matt LaFleur.
Hey, Matt, last April, your GM kind of shocked a lot of people in this league when he didn't draft a receiver. What do you think this game and this season has said about your backs, your tight ends, your receivers?
Yeah, we got a lot of great players on our roster, and, you know, our guys have gotten better and better, and that's a credit to the work they put in. I think, our coaches do a great job with them as well. So, although our guys maybe not didn't get the respect they deserved, you know, from the media, we knew what we had in terms of the players that we had on our roster, and also those guys have, like I said, they've embraced the challenge and they've gotten better and they've gone out and done it, and it all starts with their approach and how they prepare, and the guys came in great shape, and you know, it's a special group.
We'll go to Matt Schneidman next. Matt.
Matt, Rogers was telling us that he was really happy when you called the play to go back to Lazard. Can you take us through that process to go back? I know how much trust you have in him, but just what that decision was like after the drop he had earlier.
Yeah, well, I mean, we were kind of running the same play over and over out of that formation, and we just felt like that we were going to have a chance at the play action pass off of it. So, you know, we didn't get the coverage we were really looking for the first time that we attempted the pass. They ended up rolling to a single high look when we were really trying to call that play for more of a quarters coverage where the safety triggers and you go in there like you're going to block that safety and then you run right by him. And, you know, what a great, you know, great ball, great catch by Allen, big time play and a big time moment.
All right, we'll go to Mark Daniels next. Mark.
Matt, can you just talk about the really take-to-ness of your offensive line to attack that front and the way your backs would not go down after first contact? And if I could, a quick, what's up with Mason's shoulder?
Yeah, so our O-line really answered the bell, man. That's a really good front, and it's a really good scheme. And our guys did it in both the run game and the pass game. There's been so many games I was looking at, you know, at the entirety of their season over the course of the year. There's been multiple games where they've had 4+ sacks. I want to say it was like in half the games. So for us to keep our quarterback clean, that was huge. And then to compound that and do it in the run game, and our backs mentality is unbelievable. All three of those guys, we feel like we've got three number ones, and no matter who's in there, they're going to produce. And, you know, that's a great luxury to have. As far as Mason's shoulder's concerned, you know, it showed a lot of grit and toughness to come back in the game. I know he's not 100%, but, you know, he came through and delivered big for us.
Tom Silverstein's next. Tom?
Hey, Matt, to follow up on the offensive line, how much have you put on their plate? Even without Dave in the lineup, how much have you relied on them just to get your game plan going?
Every week, you know, we start off with the same approach, and that is you got to be you got to keep a defense off balance, and the way you do that is you got to have the ability to run the football. So, although it might not always be pretty, I think our guys do a hell of a job. Just a great group of men, and they're professionals. They care about one another. They care about this team, and, you know, just a very, very special group. I said it earlier, I think, in the post game with Larry, just what a great job Adam Sinovich and Luke Buckus do with that group, and then those guys just taking it upon themselves to come out and produce at a high level week in and week out. So we're going to need more of that moving forward because whoever we play next week, two great defenses, and we've seen them both. And it's going to be a great challenge for us, a great challenge for this football team. So, you know, we'll enjoy this tonight, but we'll be ready to move on tomorrow night when we find out who we're playing.
Dave Schrader's next. Dave?
Hi, Matt. Congratulations. What sense of confidence does it give your team to do what you've done well all year, situational football, red zone, third downs, and be able to do it so well again on the big stage against a good opponent?
Yeah, not only against a great opponent, but it definitely felt more like, I don't want to say a real game, but just the amount of fans in the stands definitely added a whole new level of energy out there. So it was great to be back out there with all the people in the stands, and hopefully we can get more in here next week. But, you know, it just – our guys are consistent, and, you know, we're going to have to get ready to battle next week too. So, you know, we're going to need a great week of preparation, and we'll be ready to go next week.
Packers head coach Matt LaFleur, who, again, for the second straight season, the first two seasons of his career as an NFL head coach, 13-3 in the regular season, a playoff win headed to the NFC Championship game. Finally, I want to hear from Packers running back Aaron Jones. Don't know if he's coming back next season. It doesn't necessarily, if you add up all the finances, look great for Aaron Jones, but he's certainly enjoying this ride while he's on it with the team that drafted him a few years ago.
I'm just curious, did you see something in the locker room that kind of gave you an idea that you might be able to spring that 60-yarder and just what did you see on the play?
Well, we've kind of been running that similar play a couple times and kind of seeing how the defense was fitting it, and they plussed a linebacker over, which left the middle of the field wide open, and it allowed Corey to climb up to the safety. So it pretty much popped right open, and it's good blocking up front.
Wes Hodkiewicz, go ahead.
Hey, Aaron. Well, first off, congrats. But, you know, the way you guys were sort of working and sort of chipping away in the first half, how do you think that sort of set up being able to finally kind of break one there and get the game sort of opened up at that point?
Definitely. I think that set the tone, letting them know that we're going to come out physical and what kind of football game it was going to be in. Our coaches told us, stick with it. One's going to pop. And right after halftime, it popped.
Bailey Burmaster, go ahead.
What's it mean to just return back to the NFC Championship, but also have it here at Lambeau Field, especially with the impact that the fans made today?
It means a lot, especially, like you said, our fans, being able to play back in front of them. We missed them here in Lambeau. It was loud. It was rocking. And just getting back to it, the NFC Championship, like you said, left an ugly taste in our mouth, and right back where we want to be. And now it's time to correct it.
Rob Reichel, go ahead.
Hey, Aaron. Aaron Donald was kind of in and out of the lineup. For the most part, it seemed like your guys did a pretty good job against him and the rest of that front. Just what did you see in terms of what your offensive line was getting done against their front?
Our guys came out physical, ready to play, ready for the challenge. And I'm so proud of them. They accepted the challenge. They stood there and they did their thing. They did their job, kept A-Rod clean, and kept the run lanes clean as well.
We're going to go with Wes Hodkiewicz next. Wes?
You guys being able to do some of the running back stuff, you and AJ were in the backfield a little bit. I think maybe even you and Jamal too, I'm trying to remember. But, I mean, what kind of dimension does that add to the offense, and how did you feel that sort of contributed the way you guys were able to get into a rhythm early on?
I think it helps, especially when you have two backs on the field. You don't know what's happening. I think on the first one, they drew so much attention to me going in motion that it – just opened up for AJ, and he was able to get 9 yards on that carry. And anytime you carry the ball for 9 yards, that's a good gain. We'll take 9 yards to carry anytime. So just some of those things. And then you can just never get a beat. I think we got three good backs who can pretty much do it all. So there's never any drop off when one of us goes out.
Packers running back Aaron Jones, 14 carries, 99 yards, one touchdown, average 7.1 yards per carry. Again, the final score in the divisional round, the Packers beating the Rams 32-18. That sets up a showdown for the ages.
11:20 to go. We are at the 3-yard line, moving left. Here is the play action fake. Brady throws the ball, caught Mike Evans, touchdown Tampa Bay. There you go, Tom Brady. Tom Brady can work his magic now. Three receivers to the left, Godwin, Tyler Johnson, and Mike Evans. Here's the snap, and Brady has time. Starts the best, goes the back, caught ball, touchdown Tampa Bay. It's Leonard Fournette. How about that throw on third down and 5, a 6-yard touchdown strike. Threw it right to number 28. Here it is, second down and goal from the 1. Quarterback sneak, Tom Brady needed to get in. Yes. He's very close. Is it a touchdown, Mr. Ref? Is it a touchdown, Mr. Referee? Yes. Sean Hockley, touchdown, Tampa Bay.
Really proud of our team and everything we put in to get to this point. So going 4 teams left, we're one of them. And it's tough to get to this point, so we need a big week. So we need a great week of practice. We got one of the best teams in the league, obviously, in Green Bay. The top seed, and Aaron's playing incredible. They got a great defense, so you just gotta have some mental toughness and wear some warm clothes and be ready to go. So there's it's chilly, man. That's January football in Northeast, Midwest, and we'll be prepared. You know, the team that plays the best is gonna win, not the team that is the coldest, or, you know, we're gonna have to go out there and play well, and we're gonna be challenged, and it's going to be a great game.
Tom Brady headed to yet another conference championship game. This time, though, it's in the NFC. So, yeah, Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers have never faced off in the playoffs before because Tom Brady was over in the other conference. But this is going to be the storyline that you're going to be hearing about all week long. And it's appropriate because you've got, you know, in Tom Brady, somebody who has played in 9 Super Bowls, someone who's won 6 Super Bowl rings, and there's nothing that he would want to do more than to put that Tampa Bay Buccaneers ring on his middle finger and probably show that one to Bill Belichick, because that's how that relationship disintegrated. And we see where the Buccaneers are this year as opposed to where the Patriots weren't this year. But this game does bring up some bad memories for the Packers, and certainly we're going to get into this a lot as the week goes on, both here on the Doug Russell podcast as well as over on 97.3 The Game. But the last time these two teams met, it was ugly. It was October 18th of last season. It was one of the 3 losses that the Packers had this year, which is somewhat similar to what we saw last year when the Packers went 13-3. But one of the losses that they had was to the San Francisco 49ers, the team that also clobbered them in the NFC Championship game as well. And this was the Packers' worst game this season, just like the 49ers game last year was the Packers' worst game. The Buccaneers dominated. 38-10 was the final score in this one. This after the Packers got up 10-0 in the first quarter, and then they were just swallowed up by a very good Buccaneers team. And in that game, Aaron Rodgers was awful. 16 of 35, no touchdowns, 2 interceptions. It was by far his worst game of the season, one of the worst starts that he's ever had in his entire career. As for Tom Brady, 17-27, 166 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. He was good. He wasn't great. But it was Ronald Jones, the former USC Trojan, who ran up and down on the Packers at Raymond James Stadium that day. Ronald Jones, 23 carries, 113 yards, 2 touchdowns on the ground. That was when the Packers were fielding calls about, you know, what in the hell is wrong with this team's defense? Why can't Kenny Clark live up to his contract? Why is Preston Smith not being effective? Why can't Za'Darius Smith get to the quarterback? There were all these questions about specifically the defense, but the offense sucked that day too. So I hope they didn't burn that tape. Sometimes we say, you know, what do you do after you get your ass kicked? Do you burn the tape? Or do you watch it and learn from it? Well, I hope they watched it and are watching it all this week to learn from it, because they were awful in that game. And they're going to obviously have to correct just about everything that they did wrong back on October 18th if they're going to have any chance of winning in the NFC Championship game. The difference, though, between now and then is the Packers are just playing much better football right now. They seem to be one cohesive unit. But then again, it's the NFC Championship game. Both teams are cohesive units. And I am the first one to admit that I was a Tom Brady doubter when he went to the Buccaneers. I didn't think that he was going to have the kind of season that he's had this year, and that he was going to be able to, at the age of 43, lead a brand new team this far to the NFC Championship. I didn't see it. And I'll admit when I was wrong, and I was certainly wrong, because this team is playing as one, and this team is playing as one cohesive, outstanding unit under a really good coach. Again, another guy who we all thought was done a couple of years ago in Bruce Arians. So we've got a lot to talk about as far as this game is concerned, and there's some other ancillary items around the NFL as well, including, what is the game on Sunday, yesterday's game, mean for Drew Brees? Is Drew Brees done? I suspect he is. In 5 years, he'll be a Hall of Famer. Whomever makes the case for him when the 50 electors get in the room behind closed doors and they start debating whether or not such and such and so is Hall of Fame worthy, which always happens the day before the Super Bowl, and then they make the announcement that night. Whomever is making the case for Drew Brees is just going to stand up, say his name is Drew Brees, and sit right back down, because there's nothing else that needs to be said. He is a Hall of Famer's Hall of Famer. He's got a Super Bowl ring. There's nothing left for him to do. And despite what he said after the game yesterday, I think he already knows.
I'll answer this this question one time, and that is that I'm going to give myself an opportunity to you know, think about the season, think about a lot of things, just like I did last year, and make a decision.
So what's the next for the New Orleans Saints? There's speculation that with as unhappy as Deshaun Watson is in Houston, would there not be a more natural fit for the New Orleans Saints and Deshaun Watson than a marriage in the Big Easy? Here's ESPN's Adam Schefter.
Because that no trade clause exists, if they said, hey, we want to trade Deshaun Watson to, hypothetically, Chicago, and he said, I don't want to go to Chicago. I want to go to Miami. I'm not going to report to Chicago. Or I want to be traded to the Jets. I'm not going to report to Chicago. You can begin to go through any of the variables and any of the hypotheticals in your mind. This is in a bad place right now. It looks like it's going to continue to go down a bad place. Again, the Texans can solicit whatever offers they want. But ultimately, it's going to come to what Deshaun Watson wants. Have you noticed? He spent a lot of time in New York recently. He's there right now, New York, New Jersey. Maybe that appeals to him, Greeny. We know that Miami might appeal to him. So there are two teams, by the way, with the second and third picks in the draft. So it's not difficult to come up with a scenario under which the Jets or the Dolphins could satisfy the Houston Texans. Now, the question is, where does Deshaun Watson want to go? Because, again, I believe he influences and dictates it once the Texans get to a point that they fully recognize the trouble that they're in with their quarterback.
That'll be interesting to see how that plays out. The impending divorce, it seems, between Deshaun Watson and the Houston Texans. Unless the Texans are just waiting to interview Eric Bieniemy when the Kansas City Chiefs season is over. I don't know. The NFL's got to do something about a number of things, including the assistant coaches that aren't able to interview with teams because their teams that they're still with are still playing. Eric Bieniemy is going to be a head coach in the NFL, and I think he's going to be a good head coach in the NFL, but he's got to have the opportunity to interview for some of these teams as well, whether it's the Houston Texans or any of the other ones that have had coaching vacancies this year, and it seems as though there have been a lot of them this year, a little bit more than usual. All right, that'll do it for this edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. We'll talk to you on Wednesday. We will talk to you on Friday as well. Enjoy this week, Packers fans, because if you lived through the 70s and you lived through the 80s, you know that at some point, the pendulum is going to swing the other way. These are not guaranteed deep runs into the playoffs and one win away from the Super Bowl. It's not something that happens all the time. I know the Packers have been regular participants in this particular game over the last, I'd say, decade, but really it goes back almost three decades. But still, I would just implore you to enjoy it, and we'll have a lot more to say about it as the week goes on. Have a good Monday. We'll see you on Wednesday right here on the Doug Russell Podcast.